Hello, everybody. I am so glad to be talking to you all. We're going to have a wonderful show this evening with Britt Elders. And before we get started, I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself. I am Rochelle Sparrow. I'm a trained therapist. And we just started this show about 5 weeks now. So I appreciate you all tuning in. And God bless you, Don. I appreciate you so much for allowing this show to happen. So thank you, thank you, thank you. So what I do is I'm a trans channel, and what that means is I bring in balls of light. It's kind of like a zip file. That's how I explain it to people. The balls of light come into my mind in a trans state, and they unzip and out pops a word. And the words are from my guides. And the other thing that my guides send me is energies, and the energies are for me to translate to you. So I pop in and out of this trance state to give you information to help better yourself. Of course, this is all about our own choices, about who we are as people. But the guides help you to expand your knowledge of yourself, your connection to soul, so that you can expand and heal emotionally and physically. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to answer a question now from Dean, who writes, "My name is Dean, and I am having a problem with my girlfriend, Steph. She's not in a very good place within herself right now, as she has a few emotional issues she has to get through. She told me over a week ago that while she loves deeply, she has to be alone and get through these things by herself because she doesn't want to bring me down with her. I just don't see it like that. She wouldn't bring me down. All I want to do is help in any way I can to get her through this so we can live the life together that we spoke of so many times before this. I've told her that I want to stand right next to her and face it together. She said to me there's no way she can allow herself to ruin my life in case she doesn't get through this. Can you see us getting through to the other side of this together?" All right, Dean. So what I do to audience before each show is I bring in my guides and angels and Dean's guides and angels as well, just for your own information, and our ancestors and his ancestors for the betterment of ourselves and the world around us. And my guide state, "Dean is incorrect to be concerned because his emotional well-being is something that would benefit him to focus upon rather than Steph's emotional issues at this time because he too is worried, it feels like, about being alone." So they're sending me the energy right now. "And about being afraid that somehow changes of any kind or sort will result in abandonment." And it feels like, Dean, there's an issue here of abandonment from mother. And it feels like at an early age, I want to say from 1 to 2 years old, which has resulted in a lifelong, it feels like, series of fears. It feels like with relationships with women who have not yet concluded their own ambivalence about being, it feels like, with a man or in certain relationships. So that you have chosen this particular relationship to help you recognize and heal your own issues and not Steph's. So what we suggest here is that you take a look at your own being, that you take a look at yourself and your own soul and determine what you want for yourself rather than be concerned about what Steph wants for herself. Because of her ambivalence, this will result in your becoming increasingly unaware of what you would like for yourself. So thank you, Dean. I appreciate your question. And today we have Britt Elders. And I have to take a deep breath because this is a long list, folks. She's a paranormal investigator, a columnist for Wellness Bound magazine, author and documentary filmmaker, CEO of ShirleyMaclaine.com, host of Cooking in the Light Radio, www.shirleymaclain.com, and The Energy of Food, www.healthylife.net. And thank you so much, Britt, for being on tonight.
Oh, thank you, Rochelle. This is my pleasure.
I really appreciate you. You know, the thing that that really fascinates me is I was just reading this list, is that you have been involved in so many different things. And I think the psychology of that is very interesting, because one of the reasons being is because a lot of people ask me probably the number one question as a channel that I get, what is my life purpose? And then the number two question, of course, is how do I go about achieving that? Mm-hmm. But I don't see any of those two questions in this in this very broad list.
No. I have a different philosophy, and it works so well for me, and that is, rather than you leading life and trying to control it and determining what your life purpose is, let life lead you, because inevitably it takes you in the directions you need to go for your own growth, which is what life is really all about. So that's how I end up going from UFOs and ghost research into electronics and technical sides, and being the CEO of Shirley's website, and in the food aspect. Different things happen in your life to wake you up to new awarenesses. You just have to be in a great position of mind and heart to open up to them. They're all there.
Well, that was my very interesting thought, too, is that, of course, you can't do all these types of things without challenges in terms of life.
Right.
And I think that's what's interesting in how people get stuck psychologically, is that they run across barriers. And, of course, we all have 360-degree range of choices, but a lot of people's choices are to give up. So encountering all of these different aspects of who you are and exploring them, of course you had to run across barriers as well, which obviously you made them work for you. So one of my questions to you is that we all have, for lack of a better word, survival energies, anxiety about money, anxiety about surviving, anxiety
yeah.
about just living, about taking risks, even if they're positive risks. And yet you've been able to psychologically contain the anxiety in something. I don't know what.
You know, it's really funny, because what I end up doing is, rather than containing the anxiety,
mm-hmm.
I analyze it. Why am I feeling this way? If I'm feeling, let's say I'm going to write a new book,
mm-hmm.
which I'm in the process of doing, but when you first start, it's always, oh my gosh, what's that first paragraph going to be? How is it going to express the entire aspect of what I intend to write? You have to get past that. So what I do, and what really works for me, is turning loose of it by looking at what that means to me. Am I hesitant because of my own insecurities? Am I hesitant because I'm afraid someone is going to judge me? I have to move through those issues for myself. The biggest one I find, and I do a lot of consulting work with various different people, the thing that seems to keep up with them is they're concerned about how others will view them. It's important to realize that you have to be content within yourself. If you're content within your own being, that's body, mind, and spirit, you're doing the right thing. And it means listening to your heart, your mind, to questioning yourself. You have to be literally open and vulnerable, because you are the only judge about you.
Well, that's a subject near and dear to my heart, because it's taken me quite a lengthy period of time to really expose myself, because I'm in the mental health field,
mm-hmm.
and to tell people, well, guess what, folks, I hear voices.
True.
So And I just came, I'd see an analyst, which I don't mind sharing with all you folks. I've talked about it many times on the radio. And the reason being is because I see Jungian analyst specifically to take a look at my dreams, because mm-hmm. dreams do not lie. And they really talk about what's going on the unconscious, how much of you you're accepting.
That's right. That's absolutely right, because they're there to teach you. And, you know, that's one of the things that I just love about life. First of all, I love life, period. It presents obstacles, of course. You have to have them. Nothing is perfect, and you learn from them. But dreams are such wonderful teachers, because they show us exactly what we're not focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
And they allow us the opportunity to either ignore it, which it means, you know, it's going to come up someplace else in life, or you can really examine it and start that process of clearing and cleansing.
I think that's really interesting. Now, obviously, where did you get that idea? Was it from your family to begin to analyze yourself?
You know,
that's rather sophisticated.
It's something I've done since I was a kid, and I suppose I really have my parents to thank for that. My mother is a very gifted intuitive. My father's a left-brained engineer. He worked on the early missile projects, and everything was nuts and bolts with him. My mom, on the other hand, was always aware of spirits in the house, knew when someone crossed over, was comfortable communicating with them, and in turn communicated that to us. Learning about myself just seemed to be part of that whole process. It was the examination of both the left brain and the right brain, how they have to work together. I think the biggest hurdle that I ever had to get over, we had a company, well, we still have a company called Intercept, and it's electronic countermeasure. That's my left side brain just having a great time with keeping people from being wiretapped and eavesdropped on. But then in the middle of having this great company surface and be created, and we're doing Fortune 500 companies and things like that, a UFO case lands in our lap. It's called the Billy Meyer case. And we had to make a decision. Do we put our investigative reputation on the line and go chase a UFO? Well, we and my husband and I sat down and talked about it, and we thought, let's see what's there. It started out as a curiosity and ended up consuming a part of our life. But when you sit down with a banker that you're doing electronic countermeasure for, and he says, well, what are your hobbies? And you say, investigating UFOs,
mm-hmm.
you never know what's going to happen. So it's sort of like you stepping out and saying, I hear voices.
Right.
And you have to take that first step. You've got to find that courage within yourself to be honest enough with yourself to say, what I'm doing is important. And it's part of me. And let it be part of you. It doesn't have to consume you.
So I think that that is very true. It getting to know exactly who we are and our entire uniqueness, which automatically separates us from other people.
Yes.
So that existential aloneness is there, and it's at the same time it's so paradoxical in the sense that we don't have to be alone because there are other people out there that are going through the same process.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that is just so cool that you took that step and had the courage to be able to contain whatever anxiety was there for you and taking the risk. And I'm really interested, what happened after you started to investigate the Billy Myers case?
It basically consumed us.
Yes, yes.
It did. We were involved in the Meyer case from 1978 through 1982, well, actually 84, but we had started already moving in other directions in 82. But there was just so much evidence there. There was, you know, sounds and movie footage and photographs and over 100 witnesses to the case. And it was something that had all of the aspects to analyze the physical documentation. And yet this man was saying some really great things, too. So we had to look at it from both sides. And literally, we spent 5 years of our life back and forth between here in Switzerland and laboratories all over the world analyzing the evidence. It was quite amazing.
And what was your conclusion from that? And for people who don't know the Billy Myers case, maybe you want to explain that a little bit.
Well, Billy Myers is a man that, from childhood actually, had had contact with extraterrestrials. In the 70s, he began taking photographs, recording the sounds of the craft, taking movie footage. It's a very controversial case, actually. Half the people out there believe it's real, half don't. We were the initial investigators in on this. Initial feelings were amazing. It was too good to be true. And then we had to really look at what that meant. At the end of it, we concluded that something had happened. What it is Billy's truth. Now, this was a huge growth process for us.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, because you get to a point where you realize, no, what anybody says, it's their truth, it's their understanding that is being informed from their experiences. And you know what? None of us have a right to judge that.
That's right.
And that's how we came out of this. After all this documentation, I mean, the metal samples were analyzed at IBM laboratories. They couldn't say how they were made at that period of time because it was a cold fusion process. It was something that until we sent the space shuttle up, we didn't have access to.
Wow.
Photographs, they were also, the metals were analyzed at MIT as well. Photographs were analyzed at so many different labs, including JPL and Scripps Institute and De Anza Systems. All of this was happening, and it just jars your mind because no one is saying definitively it's real or it isn't. So by the time we finished that investigation, we had to sit back and say, look, something happened. Meyer has his truth. What he does with it is basically up to him. No one is ever going to prove or disprove this case. And then we got to the point of realizing no one can ever prove or disprove anything because it's about that individual and their experiences.
Right. So what did that do for you internally in terms of your own psychological process? Because what you're describing is this incredible parallel process that took so many years. And interesting, you know, what's coming to me that I think is so fascinating, too, is that your husband was involved in this.
Oh, yes.
So you got two people that are going through this parallel process together, which is really cool and also very unusual. But his process too is tying in with yours, and then you have this outside, this very compelling, it feels like to me, just driven experience that keeps you going for years.
Yes.
And it had to bring you through so many different life experiences together as a couple.
Oh, it really did. Lee and I have a very unique relationship. We're one of the few that it really works for, but we've been together for 31 years. We live together, we work together, we experience life together. Obviously, sometimes one of us is a little slower and one is a little faster, but all of this seems to bring us to a point of better understanding of self and of our relationship. We're very, very fortunate in that respect. While we were going through the Billy Meyer case and all of the work we were doing there, though, we definitely had some great arguments.
Mm-hmm.
And they were healthy arguments because he would take it from such a straight-on investigative approach, and I'd be wandering over here about, oh, look what the Pleiadians told Billy on such and such a day, you know. We had to find a way to merge that. So he got into and really started reading the contact notes from Billy Meyer and what they were about and what the Pleiadians were telling Billy. And I got into the left brain side of analyzing the goodies, the movie footage, the metal and things like that.
We swapped roles. Wow.
And it helped us both understand each other on a completely different level without the judgment. And that was the key to the whole thing. You have to lose the judgment because if you don't, everything that you're involved with, you will set boundaries up. You create these thick, huge walls
mm-hmm.
that you don't want anyone to interfere with your judgment. And nobody progresses at that point. So you have to sort of tear down the walls and say, okay, let's discuss it. Rather than judging it, let's discuss it. Let's take pros and cons on both sides and go back and forth. And that's what we did, and that it was just huge for both of us.
Yeah, and it sounds like from your description of your parents that that way of looking at experience and life was recreated during that time period in your marriage.
Yes.
And then, thanks be to them, because it's a wonderful thing, you were able to have the flexibility because it was modeled for you in terms of switching out and changing roles to get to a different aspect.
Yes.
And, you know, and I think that, too, I think the longer that, at least in relationships from my own experience I'm talking about, the more that you can get on and mesh,
mm-hmm.
and the more that you can begin to take a look at yourself and respect your own experience, plus respect somebody else's experience, and be able to go through that process of not putting yourself on to somebody else.
Yes, yes.
And then seeing the whole picture clearly without the judgment that you're talking about.
You know, everything informs life, no matter what it is. There is some little aspect that is going to touch you, and that provides information for you. That provides a form of growth and enlightenment for you. So you have to learn how to embrace that by getting out of the way of the judgment. And the way we judge things, anymore especially, is so rigid and so confined and constrained that we end up hurting ourselves. We're not allowing ourselves to develop.
Right. And I think that, you know, as you're talking too, you know, it's coming to me that you're answering my question. My original question is that what started this conversation was, what was it that contained you?
Yeah.
And I could see that as your development just continues on, it is the lack of judgment. It is the acceptance that helped you contain you in your experience, and also helped you to develop the relationship that you have, which sounds absolutely wonderful.
It's fantastic. And, you know, going back to my childhood and how I was raised, it was wonderful because both of my parents told me, you can do anything you want to do. It's up to you.
Very
Nobody
cool.
else can carry that responsibility. It's yours. That,
Very
I think,
cool.
set everything in motion.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is a wonderful message, and I think it's a message that holds true for everyone, regardless of your parenting or what's happened to you in your life. But again, it's tearing down those walls that you're talking about and opening up to a place of non-judgmental and unconditional acceptance of the self. And as I'm talking, I'm just wondering, part of that process that it sounds like for you that you came across, it wasn't so much disregarding what was occurring that could be seen as barriers, such as anger. It sounds like the arguments that you had with your husband really helped facilitate tearing down a barrier. So
it's not
about having, one of the things that I'm thinking about, let me see if I could articulate this in a clearer manner, is that I'm thinking that, you know, what causes those barriers with people? What happens? And I think it's part of that is the judgment about what so-called negative emotions and
right.
what so-called is the dark
right
that's out there. And I don't see that as necessarily unhealthy or unhelpful.
I agree with you. Life is there to be experienced, and it brings with it so many different avenues and aspects of viewing the things around you. Some are very positive, some are not. But the ones that are not are as big a lesson, if not a greater lesson,
mm-hmm.
for everyone than the
right.
ones that are wonderful.
That's right. It reminds me of a fairy tale that I saw not too long ago with my daughter. And there was, of course, the bad evil witch, of course.
Gotcha, and that.
And there is the wonderful white princess well, they all spin up to heaven, and it turns out that they're both all good because they created this experience for the little princess to experience so that she can learn more about herself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it is for us.
It is. We do use that negative or the dark side to learn about ourselves, don't we?
Mm-hmm. So where did, you went from paranormal, how did your transitions take place?
Well, I can't even say they're transitions. They become multi-happenings. That's the only way to put it. We're still investigating UFOs.
Of interest lately?
Actually, in Mexico, since 1991, Mexico has been experiencing a huge wave of UFO activity. It's still going on. In fact, we were talking with our friend down there, Jaime Malzahn, who was telling us all about the new things happening, the new footage coming in. We have over 10,000 videotapes of UFOs right now. Yes, from Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And we're going down in January, and we'll be doing a deeper side to some more investigation down there. We've been down there at least two or three times a year for the last, 15 years. So that's going on. I came into being CEO of Shirley MacLaine's website because she was looking for someone to do this. She and I have been friends for a long time, and she decided, well, why don't you do it? Just sort of laid it in my lap, and I thought, oh, I haven't tried that before. Okay, I'll play with it. So going in cold, knowing nothing about a computer,
wow,
we put together ShirleyMacLaine.com.
That is so cool. So what is it about, it sounds like the infiltration of UFOs down in Mexico. What do you make of that? Do you have any of your mother's, it sounds like you do, the intuitive aspects of your mother?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what do you make of all that?
Well, I think, first of all, there are several different groups of energies visiting Mexico. I think one of the reasons that they came in down there was because the people are so open to phenomena. They're open to miracles. They come from a Catholic-based country, mm-hmm, which accepts and embraces miracles. So a UFO, that's just something else God presented to us. That's how they look at it. They're not so steeped in fear as we are. There aren't abductions happening in Mexico, one or two, and mostly those are people that are going through the process of determining whether they've been contacted or taken against their will as an abduction. Most of the experiences are visual. We were at a place called Atlixco, and it's not a small town, 100,000 people. Wonderful place. Everybody's happy, bouncy, good energy. It's right under Popocatépetl, which is a huge volcano outside Puebla, which is the fourth largest city in Mexico. On Saturday nights, they have huge gatherings out in the middle of fields, on hilltops. Families get together. We were amazed. We actually filmed this, carrying grandmothers up in their chairs, putting them on the hills, kids with baby bottles, and they're out there waiting for the UFOs to appear.
Wow.
It's so different there than it is here. And it goes back to this fear. We're afraid if we see something, we're going to be abducted. We're going to have an experience not of our choosing, which I have to say I don't believe ever happens. We choose everything that goes on in our life. But the people in Mexico embrace it. They don't care if they have an experience. They want to see this happening. They want to be a part of it.
Sounds like party time down there.
It is. They crack out the beer and they bring their burritos and they sit and wait. And then they all discuss what they saw last week or the week before that and, you know, what they hope to see tonight. It's so amazing.
That is amazing.
It's very different. We met with the mayor of Atlixco, Mayor Ordóñez. He was so terrific. And we said, have you ever seen one? He says, well, I'm usually busy on Saturday nights and da 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 da. And I said, well, don't they come other nights? He says, oh, yes. He says, out of all of the people here, 90% have seen UFOs. That's, 90,000 people.
Wow.
And he says, no one's afraid. I said, why? He says, because they know if they were going to hurt them, they would have already done it.
Right.
I mean, it was just so simple.
Huh. So what do you think that message is about? Do you think it's the energy of the people that first off are drawing them?
I do think that they're bringing them in. I think it goes back through their history. The Mayas, the Aztecs, all prophesied that there would be encounters with brothers from the sky. They prophesied the timing of it, which began with the total solar eclipse in 1991. And they said that that was a transition period. It was a time of ending darkness and entering a new light. Now, this is ancient prophecy. This is out of the Dresde Codex from the Maya, and it's part of the Aztec prophecy. And they really believe that when we hit this point that everybody's talking about now of 2012 and the end, quote, that it is not an end, it's a beginning.
Right.
It's a whole new realization. And
thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. And the people get this. Those people down there understand it. It wasn't until some American researchers came in, and we had already been involved down there for like 5 years. Several Americans came in and said, well, aren't you afraid of them? And you started to see a little bit of a shift. And I thought, oh, good, you know, we're out there imparting fear.
Yeah, right.
It's just what we all need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happened was there was a series of events. The first one occurred on January 1st, 1993. There's a city that runs, or a street, excuse me, that runs right through Mexico City that is this huge avenue. It came to a standstill. All the traffic stopped. People got out on their cars. They're laying on the hoods, on the roofs, watching UFOs. This went on for 3 hours.
Amazing.
Yeah. When the Pope was down there a few years ago, there were UFOs all over the stadium where he was speaking. I mean, little, they call them La Perlas down there, and they're little pearls. Balls of shiny white energy just all over the sky and dipping down, but there, over the presence of the Pope. Which the people then took to be, oh, they're UFOs approving of the Pope. You know, so it's very interesting, but it's front page news down there. There are radio shows and television programs devoted to it.
Wow.
That is so cool. Yeah, they've got an open mind.
Wow.
We're still here, steeped in our fear and closing off ourselves by our own judgment and worrying about how other people are going to judge us. Yet you've had the military come forward in Mexico with their footage, which they did a couple years ago. We went down and debriefed some generals on all of that. Televisa, which is the largest network down there, or one of the largest networks, runs news stories on it. It has been headlines. Whenever something happens, they don't hide it in the back of the paper somewhere. They put it right on the front page. It's amazing.
That is so cool. That it's that open and it's that out. You know, the other thing I'm wondering is, I take it you've tried to approach American newspapers or the media here and you've got shut down?
Well, there was a point in time where actually we produced a lot of programming for Sidon, and we took them to Mexico. They saw it. The problem here is we have this wonderful rule called fair play. So if you say something, oh, this is a wonderful experience in Mexico, somebody has the right to come in and say, this is a horrible experience in Mexico. They're demonic or whatever. That's the big problem here. That's why it's difficult to get television and radio to really get behind it. I think another aspect of that is how whoever is going to be doing this reporting will be judged. And that's unfortunate.
Okay, so if you came across and you decided to present it as demonic, it all would be well.
Pretty much so, yeah. They'd have to give somebody fair time coming in saying, oh, well, it's not so bad. But, yeah, unfortunately, that's the way we run things here.
Hmm.
We're about the only country in the world that does this, by the way. In Japan, they're very, very open. We've worked with Fuji Television, Nippon Television for years and years and years, just in the subject of UFOs. they're very open-minded to it. There's not a fair play rule there. They state what they find in their investigations. End of discussion. They always allow someone to present their position so that it goes back to this truth is something that you own as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, I was abducted, this happened, or I had a contact, this happened. They allow it all to come out and let the people make their decisions. Here we have a tendency to want to lead people to a decision.
Right. Right, and that's why it doesn't sound like fair play to me.
No, I don't think it is at all, but
yeah,
that's how they titled the little law. It's sort of an unwritten rule.
What do you think it would take to open up people here? And I know that's a large question. And you can't answer it in like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know it's about judgment, but you know, the implications, I guess, of my question do reside in a strong cultural base. But what is that exactly? Why are we so incredibly controlling?
That's a good way to put it. That's why I said let life lead you rather than trying to control it. Boy, what would it take? You know, I know
it's going
to
take 2012.
Yeah. I have to say this. If an object, a UFO, extraterrestrial craft, landed on the White House, 50% of the people would believe it and 50% wouldn't. So start there.
I can see it in poll right now.
Oh, well, absolutely. It'd be hilarious, actually. They'd all be debating what it was and why it was here. And then there would be the part of us that would say, can you save us from ourselves? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe the bottom line to that question is we have to take some responsibility for ourselves.
Right.
And if we do that, then we in turn begin to open to new adventures and experiences. And maybe that's what it would take.
Do you think that's one of the messages that they're trying to give? I mean, the aliens.
Yeah, I do.
I think so, too.
I think we have to realize we're not the only thinking beings in the universe. No matter what you label God, the Creator, Allah, whatever label you attach to it, I think it would be rather arrogant of us to think that we're the only ones that were created through whatever means. I think we have to really take the initiative to explore our inner self. What makes us work the way we work? What makes us think the way we think? React the way we react? In order to be a little susceptible to outside influences. Now, on that, I have to say, I get a lot of questions from people saying, well, do you think that they are influencing world events, and they being ETs? No, I don't. I think we have enough confused minds on this planet to influence world events. Unfortunately.
Yeah, but maybe that is one of the messages, because they certainly would have made their presence known more in a concrete way. As you're saying, landing on the White House would be pretty concrete.
Right.
And,
well, for some, but others would say it's a hoax.
Right, yeah. And they're up there, and they're certainly imparting something, some type of message. And if... Yeah, and I'm just reading this energetically. Thank you, guys. And if the message is exactly what you're saying, that there is another universe out there that we have to be not only responsible for ourselves but the world as a whole and also the universe,
mm-hmm.
then we have to become more open and see that these events and experiences are taking place. You know, I'm getting that there's going to be a lot more of that kind of thing.
I think so. I think we have to get to the point of realizing that what we do on this planet and with ourselves and our energies has a ripple effect throughout the universe. If we were going to let war command the consciousness of this planet, it would probably take us to the brink of destruction or possible destruction.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't just affect us. We've got to get to a point of understanding. Our actions create ripples throughout everything. They're energetic.
Yeah.
And they go on and on and on forever. So where do we want that responsibility to sit?
Mm-hmm.
It has to sit with every individual.
That's right. You know, the other thing is I channeled this out a long time ago in one of my books, but one of the things that I remember channeling out, which I thought was just so cool, was that the source doesn't necessarily know who he or she or is.
Mm-hmm.
It's through our experience that the source gets to know who he or she is, and we, through our experience, echo back to the source what the source is.
Oh, that's beautiful, Rosa.
Isn't that cool?
Oh,
God,
yeah.
Bless the guides for that. Oh.
Absolutely. That makes so much sense.
It's so cool. And that idea is just coming up for me right now because if we allow ourselves to take more responsibility for ourselves, then of course we have more connection with the source.
Yes.
Doing that, because we're opening up to our own unique ability and the energy of the source that's within us. And then we get to echo back to the source about what can be made more from the source.
Mm-hmm.
in terms of creation. And it just, I just got this wonderful idea of just this, like, universal, like, intergalactic communication.
There you go. That's what we need.
Yeah, that's really what it is, because, I think that's what it is. I think it's a type of communication, albeit, you know, maybe not necessarily telepathic, but I think a lot of that's going on. I think there's a lot of telepathic communication. I think some of people are aware of that and some people may not be, but just even the floating out from Mexico, all of this information is communicating.
Yes.
A lot.
Well, and I'll give you an example of some of the communication things that are happening down there. There was a group of teenagers, and they had their video camera out, and they were having a party and videotaping that. And they saw this object in the sky, and somebody says, oh, it's a star, Australia. And they said, no, it's not. And the guy focused his camera on it, and he watched and waited. And then he said, if you're not a star, move in a circle. And it did.
Cool.
And then he said, okay, can you go straight up? And it did.
Wow.
All of this is on video. The camera's on a tripod. You've got foreground. You know that he's not moving the camera in a circle. Amazing. So there was some communication link happening there. Now, when I say that I don't think the UFOs are informing us in a negative way, I do think that if you're open to it, if you are receptive, there is an availability of communication with literally anything. I don't care if it's nature or UFOs. It exists. But you have to be prepared, willing, open, let those walls down, and enjoy the experience.
I think that is so true, and just in terms of looking at the equanimity of the experience, and there's no necessarily right or wrong in terms of,
right,
of the experience, but just allowing it to happen in a free-flowing manner. And the other thing that I'm thinking as I'm talking to you, because you've made some films about UFOs.
Yeah, we've made a total of 7 documentaries, 4 on the Meyer case and 3 on Mexico and 1 on an abduction case that ended up being a contact case.
Thinking about these documentaries and, you know, what's coming to me energetically from the documentaries is that it reverberated out And I'm not sure exactly what I mean without channeling that out, and I'm not going to do that now. But the energy feels like you made the documentaries. You yourself communicated all of this information. It reverberated out. It feels like over years' length of time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reverberation back that's still happening.
That's true.
And what is all that?
Well, first of all, I got to say, when you do a documentary, there is no market for it. I mean, all right, you can maybe do something on the History Channel or something like that, but there really isn't a market for them in this country. Our documentaries went worldwide, and the reverberation of it is every time an experience happens someplace out there in the world with someone that has seen these videos,
mm-hmm.
they react that this is such a bad thing. I'm seeing something. So they, in turn, start to experience new things. And I think that's what the reverberation is.
Yes.
We've helped open people to the possibilities rather than through, you know, the walls again, setting it up through fear. We've said, just experience it. Here's what is going on with other people. And it has made a big, big difference.
Yes, it has.
You know, we've had people come in from all over the world to work through some aspect of fear that they had with a UFO experience. And once they get to the point of realizing that on some level this was an agreement they made and they can learn from it and they can get to a point where they can share their experiences, wow, when they hit that, it's like a blossoming of a rose. It's amazing.
Wow. That is so such an awesome thing that you did for people, because it is just amazing in terms of opening up the cultures worldwide.
It's important. We have to realize that we're global. I mean, we have our countries, we have our cities, we have our communities. Communities are extremely important, but we're also a global community and a universal community.
So are you still considering making more of these films? Or?
Actually, we are.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, if you don't mind me saying it. There's a lot of film energy here, so
yeah.
I both go with the flow, huh?
Exactly. Lee is finishing up a book right now on his experiences in the Amazon basin of Ecuador,
mm-hmm.
and when he finishes that, we're going to start piecing together a whole new video. It's an update on Mexico and the experiences going on down there, because they're so wonderful. They're just, when you watch it, whether you want to believe that there is an extraterrestrial source guiding these objects or not, the fact that so many people in such a major country in the world are experiencing this and loving it,
mm-hmm.
just, you feel good.
Hmm.
We want to share that.
Yeah, that is wonderful. Now, I take it that people in the United States are having these same type of experiences.
They are.
Yeah.
They are. In fact, there is a good friend of ours, Dr. Lynn Kaiti, she's written a book and she's done a documentary called The Phoenix Lights.
Mm-hmm.
She's a doctor, and she experienced the flap of the Phoenix Lights several years ago, videotaped them. Got the best video on it. Just a terrific lady. She left her profession behind to pursue her interest in this subject.
Mm.
She's just one of millions. There are a lot of people out there. And yes, I think there are some things out there that are you know, we would lean towards fear. Dr. Lear's research on implants and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that when people really examine what's going on, there's not much to be afraid of. If someone was going to come in and try to control us, that would have already happened.
So what is the implants about?
Well, they find, I've been aware of this for several years, we've worked with a lot of different doctors, but they're finding implants that are little metal or like a plaque material. Some materials can't even be identified. We don't know what they are. That have been implanted in people. Now, are they tags like the military is using now to track their soldiers? What are they? We're not really sure. I haven't found anybody that can give you a definitive on what those are. But these people have had UFO experiences, and then suddenly they have a sinus infection or they have a pain in their neck, and they'll go in and have an X-ray, and here's this object that appears in the X-ray. And there are some doctors now, medical doctors, professionals, that are seriously looking into this because they want answers, but something we really don't have answers to.
Very interesting. I'm getting that a lot of them are communication devices.
I think so. And I think that on many levels, these people that have the experience of finding an implant, maybe the finding part of it is opening them up to the fact that they don't need the implant to do the communicating.
I wonder what they're so interested in communicating. Like, what do they want to tell us? Have you ever run into people who've had experiences that can answer that question? Or maybe you can answer that question.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a lot of objects, I have to say that. But as far as my conscious mind goes, I do have missing time, but I don't recall any discussions in any arenas.
Mm-hmm.
However, Billy Meyer, several contactees, actually, that we've worked with, have said the bottom line is to getting us to realize that we are not the only thinking humans in the universe, and to taking responsibility for our thoughts, because our thoughts are as strong and as powerful as our actions.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me of something else I channel from that same book, and it reminds me about, thank you. Two things, one of them being that there are planets that have peaceful relations.
Mm-hmm.
And that have no war, that war is obsolete, and they don't need war any longer as a learning experience for their own humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy from those particular planets actually feeds our own hope that
right.
such a place can exist. And then our energy back in terms of warring, in terms of pain, in terms of suffering, actually is so strong that it affects people on other planets.
I absolutely believe that.
And
more we involve ourselves in that, the more difficult it's got to become, not only for us, but for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's no wonder that we put up such walls because of the awesome, I'm talking about just humanity in general, just the awesome responsibility that we all have in making those kinds of determinations and choices in terms of our own energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that we don't necessarily want the responsibility, so we'd rather make it external in some external god or some government or...
Absolutely.
Or some regime or something extra to ourselves rather than really taking a look at who and why and what we are. And maybe that's the ultimate message, that who and why and what we are cannot be contained in some external source that acts as some definitive bull.
So well put, yes. And, you know, that's exactly it, because we separate ourselves with these huge, thick walls. Then we basically don't have the right to create opinions and energy, and we become sheep. And
yeah.
It's much more comfortable being a sheep out there than it is, you know, wandering through life and letting life lead you. Those walls really create the problems, don't they?
They do, and as I'm thinking about this and listening to you, I really appreciate your life, because you've taken the courage to be able to know who you are and taking those risks and gone through all of the barriers and crossed over them with courage. And I don't think that's an easy thing to do. So I just appreciate your life and your ability to put that kind of energy out there, because it acts as a role model. Because because of your energy and because of your direction, you've been able to influence millions of people through your documentaries and through your work.
Thank you.
Exactly what you do.
Thank you. It's something that I cherish. I really do. When I was a kid, I decided that it was important to learn something every day and then to experience whatever crossed my path. All experiences aren't good, mm-hmm. but they're there, and they should have a purpose in your life. So by ignoring them or putting up these walls and not allowing them in, I think so many people today hurt themselves.
Yeah.
They don't allow themselves the opportunity to really spread their wings and soar, and we should all be doing that.
That's right. That's right. And it's just that denial.
Yes.
It's that denial of our own awesome power of who we are inside.
It absolutely is. Mm. And it is a reflection. When you get to a point where you're just loving life and everything it has to bring you, it reflects in every single thing you do and every person you meet. And there are no bad experiences then. Mm-hmm. Everything has a reason for happening. You may not know what it is at the time, but eventually you will understand why it participated in your life.
Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like that as a final statement to our show today. We have a few minutes left. We have about 5 minutes left. And what I'd like to do now is to get into the two radio shows that you're doing and the work that you're doing currently with Shirley MacLaine, just so that the audience can currently contact you now, and also the name of your documentaries too.
Well, the documentaries are all available on Shirley's website. The ones on the Meyer case are, and that's the case in Switzerland, Contact, The Meyer Chronicles, The Movie Footage, and The Metal. And then the ones on Mexico are Messengers of Destiny, Masters of the Stars, and Voyagers of the Sixth Sun. And the other one is called Abduction. And that abduction case ended up being a contact case. Mm-hmm. We've also written several books. They're all out of print now. Hopefully we'll be bringing them back into print.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I'm doing, this other phase of my life that has just really opened up in the last couple of years, is because of some health issues, not mine, but with people associated with me and close to me, I really started looking at what we were doing to our bodies and how that affected every aspect of your life, your mental well-being, your spiritual well-being, and your physical well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a program that Shirley asked me to do called Cooking in the Light, and that's on her website, which is www.shirleymaclaine.com. And it's what I've done is I've brought guests in that have great things to share with people about how to stay healthy, about how food can be not only something satisfying, but something nutritional and keep you energetic and going at your best. Then, recently, in the last 3 weeks, someone came in and said, you know, I'd like to have you do another show. So now I'm doing another program, too. It's on healthylife.net, and it's called The Energy of Food. And with The Energy of Food, I'm exploring how food works with people, how it motivates people, how we interact with it. It's such a huge part of our life,
mm-hmm.
and there are so many aspects that we don't pay attention to. Everything from why organic is important to avoiding anything genetically modified, to what happens using food as the basis for spiritual growth. I'm even going to be doing some programs on the numerology of food and dreams
cool.
and food. Yeah.
And what was the last one, I'm sorry?
Dreams and food.
Dreams and food.
Going back to the earlier part of our conversation today on dreams.
Yeah.
And,
That is just amazing. Yeah, that is very, very interesting. Because when you think about it, food is such an archetype.
It is. Definitely is. And unfortunately, we use it. We don't enjoy food the way it should be enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
We use it. It becomes a crutch. It becomes when we're upset or we're nervous or we're bored, we eat.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not getting the nourishment from the food if we're eating on those levels.
Very cool. And that one is on www.healthylife.net.
Right.
And you're also writing a book right now.
I'm actually in the middle of two books. I'm writing a book about the energy of food, and we're also working on another book that's on UFOs. So
very cool.
Got to keep busy. Let life lead you.
Very cool. Well, again, I just appreciate who you are and your courage and the energy that you brought here to this program today. So I appreciate you and all the work that you've done and the work that you're doing to help open up people and to model courage for people. And you all out there, stay open to yourselves, your own unique abilities to be you, because nobody else can be you but you, and you're the only ones that can do the very best job at it. So I appreciate you, Britt, for being on.
Oh, thank you, Rochelle. I appreciate you so much for having the courage to open up to people and share your gift.
Oh, well, thank you. And you all have a good evening, and thank you to our host, Don. So long, and have a good week, everyone. Bye-bye now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.